Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the response of the day for the 11th of Sivan. And today we get the privilege of hearing from Chaim David Halevi on the question of novelty in halacha, of chidush, of novelty in halacha. Chaim David Halevi, something we see occasionally, but usually his tshuvot, his responses are so short that he doesn't fit into the framework that I've built here in terms of how we find then what we do and the length of response that we look at. And should I say the Charav, Chelek Zayin Simon Nandalet, Volume 7, response number 54, he responds to a letter that was written on the 7th of Kislev of Tavshin Memvav, late 1985, I'm pretty sure. Zayin Kislev is late 1985. But the man is responding to an article that Rav Chaim David Halevi had written in Hatzofeh on the 11th of Sivan of Tavshin Memhei. The 11th of Sivan is our day of 1985. So 6 months later, this guy, whoever he is, and he doesn't name him, and he treats him respectfully, stumbles across an issue of Hatzofeh, an old 6-month-old issue of Hatzofeh, which was the Mizrahi newspaper for a long time. There used to be a time when newspapers in Israel were religious newspapers and published like Torah articles on issues, I think it was a weekly. It might have been a daily, but I think it was a weekly. So today, nowadays, I think there's Makor Rishon is sort of the successor to Hatzofeh. So in Hatzofeh, the 11th of Sivan of Tavshin Memhei, Rav Chaim David Halevi had written an article in which he had said, we'll see what he said in a second, because the man writing him is surprised at some of the phrases that Rav Chaim David Halevi had written, such as, Yesh ba'ayot kashot shenotzrot b'chayenu she'en lan pitaron barur v'choteich balacha. There are serious issues. He says there are serious problems that have no clear and obvious solution within halacha. And he went on to say that we have to find them. We have to think creatively. And he also wrote a phrase that this man had taken exception to, that our chazal, our rabbis, our predecessors, lo histapku b'otan halachot shayu misurot b'yadam. They didn't just take halacha as it was given with them and live with it the way it was. V'tarchu l'chadesh halachot. They worked to find new versions of halacha. So this man took it as, you know, as God forbid, something like a reformed Jew saying, oh, we can just halacha as much as we want. And so he was writing to him about it. And Chaim David Halevi, who's a really important Torah scholar, chief rabbi of Tel Aviv for many, many years, another one was, and even the latest Torah scholars, the latest achronim, had novel halachic ideas. Umaskanati, and his conclusion, he says, was Yeshorech Barur Lechapes Pitronot Beruach Hamikorot Uvneemanut Mukhletet Lahem Ulechadesh Chidushim Hilchatiim. Takes two sides of such an interesting question. Our obligation, he says, to find solutions following the spirit of the sources and with a complete faith to them, and then to come up with new halachot, meaning, and whenever somebody makes a two-sided statement, I find it so hard for many, many people to hear both sides. They'll hear one side or the other. He says, we have to be completely dedicated and faithful to the spirit and the ideology and all that's buried within the ancient sources, or the more recent sources. We have to keep to them while we also find new halachot. How's that going to work? So this man writes, what are you talking about? Are we allowed, the phrase in Hebrew is lazuz kim lo nimat, even like an inch, like we would say even an inch, but even a jot, a tittle, an iota from the halacha as it's written and given to us. So what do you mean to have novel ideas? If it fits the Shulchan Aruch, it's not novel. If it doesn't fit the Shulchan Aruch, who allows you to do it? That's what the man was writing to him. So he's obviously a man we would call a religious small c conservative. Somebody who just thinks that halacha is what it is and it doesn't change and you don't have any adaptations of it. And he's writing from Chaim David Halevi to complain about his presentation as if there's such a thing as creating novelty, as creating new halachic ideas. So Chaim David Halevi says, I'm writing back to you in love, and I'll tell you that the truth is, as you said, that we're not allowed to change a bit from the truth. Right? Whatever the truth is, we have to follow the truth. But I don't agree, he says, that if somebody finds novel halachic approaches that are within the ruach, a halacha, that fully fit the spirit of what halacha wants, and that's obviously a hard term, because one of the challenges in many times, one of the things that leads to many disputes is that one side will say, this is the ruach, the spirit of halacha, the other side will say, no, it's not, it's completely outside of halacha. So that's why halachic novelty can become a contentious topic. But if you stay with that, he says, I don't think that's a straying from halacha. If I find a novel halachic application from within that thing, then I don't think I'm doing anything wrong. Afim mishanim ha-halakha, even though you're actually changing a halachic practice from what we do. So I recently had the opportunity to review a tshuva of Shuchev HaLevi's Rav Vosner's about music and radios in a time when the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. And one of the things that I was suggesting there maybe was that one could possibly argue that music, the nature of music and its role in people's lives has changed such that whatever the Gemara had to say about it in terms of it and as an expression of mourning over the Beit HaMikdash might have changed, therefore the application might have changed. Whether or not that's true, that's not my point here. My point here is that that's what Rav Chaim Zalman Levi is saying, that there are times when you'll change a halacha, and yet it'll be what halacha really thinks and really wants. And so you have to be very careful. You have to know what halacha really wants and thinks, and then you have to find the new applications of it. But he's saying that's what he thinks. And he says, to get to your conclusion that it's wrong to do it, he says, you've ignored much of my article. Now, I don't know if the man did or didn't read the whole article. People sometimes, you know, fire off letters just because, or they, you know, I don't get any emails about these responses, Shiurim. So if you want to send me an email, grothst@gmail.com, I will not think that you're just firing off an email at me, but people fire off letters without reason. He says, you ignored my whole article, he says, because I gave in the article, Chaim David Levy says, actual examples of chidush, of novel ideas. So for example, he gave an example from a Gemara in Gittin. The Tosfot in Gittin on Daf Mem Hey had said Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, when he redeemed the child with extra money, that was because the child was a muflag b'chachma, was really, really wise. Inami b'shat korban abayit lo shayach lo ligor, or because it was time of destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. I'll explain that, sorry, in a second. It's based on a story later on in Gittin, and Tosfos brought it up in a different context, but later on in Gittin, and Daf Nun Chet Amin Aleph, and this is a Gemara that's part of that big block of Gemaras in Gittin, like three Dafim in Gittin, that one is allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. So that was like an early Gemara that I had been through several times in my life, even before there were any Gemaras that I'd been through several times in my life, because every Tisha B'Av, what did you do? So you sat and you went over that, and eventually it sank in a little bit. So in that Gemara in Gittin, tells a story. It's based on the Mishnah in Gittin. It said that we aren't podin shavuyim. We don't ransom captives. Yoter al kidei de mehem. We don't do it for more than the market price for them. In the time of the Mishnah, time of the Gemara, kidnapping people was a business proposition. There was sometimes you kidnap people with the threat of death to them, but very often there was kidnapping and it was just a financial transaction and you had to negotiate a ransom. Once you negotiated a ransom, you'd get the person back. So, and that's where the whole halakhic idea that pidyon shvuyim was a very important mitzvah came, because if the negotiations didn't go anywhere, God forbid, they might decide to just cut their losses and go away. So that's why it was considered a very important mitzvah. But the Mishnah says you don't do it for more than kidei demehem, for more than whatever the market rate is, for whatever reasons, either because you don't want to have the community be forced into that, or because if you pay too much for one, that immediately raises the market price for everybody else. In any case, the Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, who was a Tana, was in Rome, or he's in some city in the Roman country, and they told him, people in the said, you know, there's a young man, a young child or a boy in prison, and he's very beautiful. He's very good looking. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya goes outside the prison, and he stands outside there, and he recites the beginning of a pasuk in Yeshayahu chapter 42, verse 24. He says, "Minatan lim shisaya hakov v'Yisrael levozizim lo," who led to the Jewish people being plundered and people being able to rule over them. And from inside the prison, the kid answers, "Hello Hashem zu," with the rest of the pasuk. "Hello Hashem zu chatanu lo, velo avu b'drachav halach." It's Hashem towards whom we have sinned, and we didn't want to follow Hashem's ways, and we didn't listen to His Torah. Based on that experience, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya decides that this young boy is going to grow up to be a moreh hora'ah b'Yisrael, a great teacher of Torah among the Jewish people. And he said, "And I'm not leaving here until I redeem him." And he redeemed him for a lot more money than was the going weight. And he eventually turned into Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha is an important Tana as well. He's the source of an Avram Fried song about Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha going in and seeing a katriel, a kashem tzvakot. And anyway, it becomes you check him out, he's sort of like a miracle worker among Tanaim. Tosafot point out, though, that seems odd. Why was it that Rabbi Yeshua was allowed to do that? After all, the Mishnah says, we are not podei yoter mikidei demeim. So Tosafot offers two possible answers. One possible answer is, there's a muflag b'chachma, the kid was so bright. Now, this is me talking, so it's not in the tshuva, but I wonder, when in that story, What was it that convinced Rabbi Yehoshua that he needed to redeem this kid? This kid was definitely going to be Moriah or Rabbi Yisrael. If it was just that the kid happened, no, Pasuk in Yeshaya, I find that odd to me, you know, and I could be wrong, but I find that odd that, you know, a Pasuk in Yeshaya, just because, you know, he happened to know a Pasuk in Yeshaya, maybe he got up to that in school and he learned well. Why does that prove he's going to be Moriah or Rabbi? I think it might be that he was a kid of an age where there was no way he would have known the Pasuk, or he knew lots of Pesukim, but he wouldn't necessarily, you know, to know Tanakh backwards and forwards. So if he did that already by his age, maybe that was good enough. But I think it's also the content of the Pesuk, because the content of the Pesuk is the recognition that when things happen to the Jewish people as a people, that it's a function of their observance or lack of it, their relationship with Hashem, that if a kid has already absorbed that idea and accepted that idea, that's proof. In any case, Tosfos says it was that reason. Since the kid was so wise already, that justified breaking the rules on how much we pay to redeem captives. That's one possibility. Or another possibility is that it was already after Churban HaBayit. Once it's after Churban HaBayit, once the thing has been destroyed, and the Jewish people don't have like a central nation state, then you don't have to worry that people are going to just start jumping on Jews. I'm not sure why that would be so true, but that's the other option that Tosfos offered. Back now to the Tshuva. Those stories, said Reb Chaim Aval Levi in the original article, was that either one of those are big chiddush of Rishu ben Chananya's. You have a mission. The mission makes a very clear halacha, and he comes to decide and act upon his understanding that the mission did not mean to include X situation. Whatever X situation is, right? If it's, according to Tosfos, if it's a very wise person, that's a chiddush, that's a novel halachic idea, not in the Mishnah. Or if it's that once the Beit HaMikdash gets destroyed, that changes the dynamics of the Jewish people and that halacha is no longer in play. Again, it's not that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya is right or wrong. He may be right. But he's right in a way where he made a novel conclusion. He drew a novel conclusion and he acted upon it. And then we decide that it's within, and it apparently is within the proper spirit of halacha. So that shows, that's one example showing. And then it gets paskin in Shulchan Aruch, in Yeridah, in Rish Nun Beis, which is the laws of Tzedakah. Paragraph 4 says, he probably must read your term the mayhem, but a Talmud Chacham we do, a Torah scholar, a wafilu tamid charif. This is the way the Shulchan Aruch has it. Even if he's just a very, very good student, ve'efshar sheye adam gadol. And it's possible he'll turn into an important Torah scholar, an important person in the Jewish community. Note that, whereas Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya seemed to say, I'm positive, by the time of Shulchan Aruch, he'd say, there's no way you can actually be positive. It must be that he means, I have good enough evidence that I'm able to do it. So that's one example that Rav Chaim Dovin HaLevi gave for novelty in halacha within the time of the Mishnah in the Gemara already. Another option, another possibility he points out now is that he had brought there in the original article that the Shudrad Vaz had also had a discussion of a situation where they allowed being poda, redeeming captives for more money than the market rate, which is a great chiddush, that's what the Radvaz says, and the Radvaz discusses it, and he's not bothered by the idea of the chiddush, he just wants to know what was it that led them to do it. And the man writing the letter to Chaim Dovin HaLevi has ignored all this. If you want more examples, he says, I could run out of room. There's so many examples. So he says, what I want to talk about is the way to understand why all this is true. And he says, I don't need more examples. I gave examples in the article. These are a couple of the examples, but you see it all over the place. You see the people are willing to come up with novel halakhic ideas and apply them and assume that they really fit the spirit of the system. So Chaim Dovin HaLevi says, because the word halakha, which means sort of like a path on which you walk, a place you go, he says what it really means is, its real meaning is something the Jewish people have accepted from Sinai until now that the Jews walk in. As it says in the Torah, "V'hodata lahem et haderech yilchuba." You tell them the path upon which they are supposed to walk or go. So halakha is the path upon which we walk or go. So that version is the unchanging core of halakha. That's what it's got to mean. And he's implying, I think, that other things aren't halakha. He's about to say, other people use the word halakha more loosely over the course of time, but the original definition is something that goes from Sinai all the way until now. So whether we, you know, put a mezuzah this way or that way on the door, right? Straight up, lying down, slanted, those are not, and he's saying, those are not by the original definition of the word halakha, halachot, because it's not what the Jewish people have done always. The idea of a mezuzah on the door is a halakha, because it's always been. So that's That's what he's saying. So he's saying when you want to talk about halacha and changing halacha, if what you mean is I'm changing a specific example of how I act, and it's an example that's changed over time anyway, meaning is there a halacha about the size of matzahs or the thickness of matzahs? There are halachas about the parameters of it, because if you get too big or too small, so those are what we call halachot, but even that, right, halacha would only be those things which are timeless and universal within Judaism, what he's saying. And part of the reason why we have so many parts of it that changes, he says, is because it's clear that any law can't last throughout all human generations, because as life shifts, as things shift, as people have cars, as they have telephones, they have whatever you want to change, whatever things change, if they move from one climate to another climate, so a law that fit one set of so-called social, economic, cultural, psychological circumstances won't quite fit another one or another generation, right? So it needs to be adapted. It needs to be fixed. So he says, how could you think the Torah gives us chukim and mishpatim from thousands of years ago, and we do the exact same thing today? And we'll continue doing it until the end of all generations. How could that work? He's not saying it doesn't. He's saying that the solution is going to be in the things he's advocating for. But how could it be that at the time they're given until today, with all the difference between people, you know, imagine if we met, as we, God willing, one day will, at the time of Tikkun HaMeitim, if we met somebody from 3,500 years ago who was at Har Sinai, around 3,500 years, whatever the number of years ago it was, but let's say 3,500 years ago was at Har Sinai, we meet that person, how much do we have in common with them? So the answer is, based on the Torah, we have a lot in common with them, but many of the applications are going to be seem weird and odd to us and to them. And those parts, he says, are the parts that are going to be open to change. He says, certainly, of course, Hashem can see the future. Hashem knows how human history is going to go, and Hashem can see everything that's going to happen. But the way of applying it each time, you're going to have to figure that out. So I think that this is a really, really important point. This is me talking. He doesn't say this explicitly in the Tshuva, but I think this is what he really means, is that Torah law, and you see this, if you just learn sometimes with an eye out towards what's d'oraita and what's d'rabbanan, Torah law is really relatively minimalist, and it makes broad claims about what we're supposed to do, but it doesn't so much, it does a little bit of it, but it doesn't so much say, you know, you have to do this act in exactly this way, at exactly this time, in this way. So it leaves a lots of room, except for things that really are timeless and universal, right? So the definition of a lulav, the definition of an esrog, is always the definition of a lulav and esrog, so you have to get a lulav and esrog. So that's relatively easy, but a lot of other things that change with time, so that if you look carefully, Torah law doesn't actually say, no, you have to always do it in the old way. And I think that's part of what he's suggesting here. And therefore, he's saying it's got to be clear that Chachmei Yisrael, the Torah scholars, those who have absorbed the system and understood the system and come to really be part from within the system, can know what kinds of changes are really adaptations to the new circumstances in which they find themselves, and that will be going in the Derech HaTorah, will be a walking in the ways of the Torah. So let's give examples. Another example he gives is Aaron Cohen. On the day he comes up with the new halacha, the day that Nadav and Avihu were killed for whatever they did wrong at the dedication of the Beit Hamikdash, so at the time there were a bunch of korbanot that Aaron and his two remaining sons were supposed to eat. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, you eat them b'makom kadosh, you eat them in the holy place, because that's what I was commanded. And the point is, in many cases, an onen, somebody who has just lost a close relative, is not allowed, let alone required, to partake of kachim, to partake of sacrifices that would have been offered. So Moshe told them to eat the korbanot, but they ended up, it turned out, burning one of the korbanot that was offered. So one of the offerings offered was the Seir Rosh Chodesh, was the same goat that would be offered every Rosh Chodesh for a chatat. So they ended up burning that one. They didn't eat it, they burnt it as if it couldn't be eaten. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes to them angrily, that's what the Torah says. He says, why didn't you eat it? I told you that you were supposed to eat the korbanot, meaning I had a commandment from Hashem that despite being onanim, despite being an immediate loss of their close relatives, they were supposed to, in this case, eat kachin. They're supposed to eat sanctified food. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu had told them. And then it turned out one of the korbanot, the other korbanot they ate, but that one they burned. So Aaron says to him, how can I eat a chatat today? Is it going to be It's pleasing in the eyes of Hashem. And the Gemara in Zvachim Kuf Aleph Amid Bet says what his claim was you heard about Kodshei Sha'ah, when Hashem told you we should eat it anyway, even though we're owning him. That's about korbanot that are only for this one occasion. The dedication of the Mishkan is a special occasion. For that one situation, Hashem said, yes, eat those korbanot. The issue of being an onain will not apply here. But that doesn't teach me that a korban, that's really just the first of monthly korbanot that will happen all throughout whenever we have a Mishkan or a Beit HaMikdash, that wasn't part of the thing. So Rav Chaim Dovid points out, I don't figure that out on his own. It was Misvarat Atzmo. Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, eat the korbanot. And he comes to eat the korbanot, he's looking at the korbanot, and he says, not those korbanot, I'm eating, not that korban. I'm eating the other korbanot, because Moshe Rabbeinu told me to, but I'm not eating that one. Right? So, kind of like he says, if you look in the Orach Chaim, there's a beautiful explanation for this. So I looked up the Orach Chaim because I wanted to see the explanation. He says, the Orach Chaim said, you might think that this means that a Talmid can be more ha'ra'a le'atzmo b'mkom rebo. Meaning, if Aaron figured it out that way, why didn't Aaron go back to Moshe and say, Moshe Rabbeinu, I think that you must have only meant those korbanot, not this one. So, usually we say that without explicit permission, a student isn't allowed to start paskin a halacha when his Rebbe is run. He has to ask his Rebbe. So, and the Rosh said that. The Rosh paskin that way. It seems that this would be prove it the other way. The Orach Chaim suggests maybe not. Maybe it doesn't quite qualify as a hora'ah, as a paskining of halacha. Why not? Because if you look in Gemara in Yom Rashi in Daf Hamid Bet, says that when Aaron HaKohen figured out this halacha for himself, he learned it as a kal v'chomer from Maaser. The case of Maaser, the pasuk says you can't eat Maaser when you're an onan. You can't eat Maaser when you've lost a close relative. And you have to announce that when you've announced that you've finished, you've completed your dealings with Maaser, you make a vidui Maaser, you make a big public announcement to the Kohen that I've done all the right things, including lo achalti ve'oni. I didn't eat it when I was an onan. So Aaron says to himself, it's true of Maaser, it's got to be that's all the more so true of actual korbanot, like a Se'ir Rosh Chodesh, like a v'chatat, the goat that we offer as a sin offering on Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, because it's a kal v'chomer, because it's a logical inference from a rule that Moshe Rabbeinu had given him, he didn't think of it as a hora'ah. Not only didn't he think of it, but the Orach Chaim is suggesting it wasn't in fact a hora'ah. It was included in that original claim. Now that's Rav Chaim Dovid Levi saying that's a wild Orach Chaim, because it in fact is a wild Orach Chaim. It's a wild Orach Chaim because that implies that when we use our logic, if we think that something that we come to believe is a complete logical extension, now that's a very it's a very misleading term. There are plenty of people who will say, oh, this is a complete logical extension of this, when it's completely not. But a kal v'chomer, if it's a valid kal v'chomer, is. That can get very difficult, because plenty of people will draw wrong inferences and think they're drawing right inferences. But in any case, the Orach Chaim is suggesting that if a student is going to draw an inference from something his teacher had said, and it's a correct logical inference, then that's not considered a hora'ah. I think that's a very interesting claim. However you deal with that, Rav Chaim Dovid Levi is pointing out the Gemara is clearly assuming, the Gemara and the Torah are clearly assuming that Aaron HaKohen came to a conclusion on his own and decided to act upon it. It was a novel conclusion because it wasn't completely obvious from what had been said before. It wasn't explicitly said to him before. And Moshe Rabbeinu ends up agreeing. And he says, yeah, that's good logic. So the truth is, Chaim Dovid points out, there are Chazal think that Moshe ends up saying, not just that you're right, but that that's what I heard from Hashem, and he admits that he had forgotten, and he just admits to it. But that, so that's a something, but it's still true that in Aaron's experience of what was going on, he was coming up with a new idea based on his understanding of the proper way to apply halachot that he had already learned. So that teaches, Rav Chaim Dovid Levi says, that change, as conditions change, we have the obligation and the right to change things as well. Another example that he brings is the Gemara in both the Bavli and Sota, Ted Zion, as well as the Yerushalmi Kiddushin, say that Rabbi Shmuel points out that there are three places where the halachic tradition that we have goes around or ignores or changes we have in the Psukim. Pasuk in the Torah says, "Zuchatav la sefer kritut," that a man has to write a book of divorce, a book to cut off his relationship with his wife if they want to get divorced. And The halacha came along and said, it doesn't have to be a book. It has to be anything that's separate from the ground. So there's no need for it to be looked in any way like a book. It just has to be something on which you can write something. Torah says, "Be'ish asher yatsud tzedekah." If somebody hunts something and he kills it, v'chisahu be'afar, he has to cover it with, it says be'afar. So afar really means dirt. But the halacha says, you know, the definition of dirt is anything that grows tzmachin, anything that grows plants. A third example in that Gemara is v'ratzal denov edos no ba'martzeya. The Torah says that if a slave has been a slave for his 6 years and then says he wants to stay, in whatever situation he's allowed to stay, but they pierce the ear. So it says, pierce the ear, b'martzeya. So a martzeya is an actual specific tool, but the halacha came along and said, no, you can use anything as long as it could be a thorn, it could be a piece of glass, whatever will make the piercing. So those are three examples from the Gemara where the Torah seems to say something very clearly, and the halacha came along and told you, then it actually meant something broader, something different. So it's very surprising. Torah says it very clearly, and says it like many other mitzvahs in the Torah. Right? The Torah says something, and then the halacha comes along and it explains how it is. And so those are, to me, interesting examples, because there you could have argued that the Torah Shebichtav comes with the Torah Shebaalpeh. Those weren't cases of halacha exchanging, it was a case of halacha explaining what the original Torah meant. So that those examples to me aren't necessarily the most perfect examples, but they're included in Ruchai Dovid Levi's letter. He's saying that very often the Torah is stated in a very clear and seemingly unequivocal way, and the Torah Shebaal Peh explains things. Oh, I'm sorry. He does address that, and his point is not that the Torah Shebaal Peh came later and did it. His point is, why would you construct the Torah there? Why wouldn't Hashem just say what he wanted to say in the Torah itself? Hashem said, wrote the Torah Shebaal and gave the Torah Shebaal Peh. So why would you have the Torah Shebaal write it in a very, you know, blanket way or a very specific way, and then, like, let's say it's going to be a safer to it, and let the Torah Shebaal Peh explain, you know what, anything that's separate from the ground. Why do it that way? Why not just put it into the original thing or use a different word? So he suggests that the reason is to tell us that halachot are, this is the way it works, that it's not iron set in stone. It's the kind of thing that involves interpretation and application and adjustment, so that thing which could have been a book at one time, a sefer kritut, a book of divorce, a writ of divorce, that the Torah Shebaal Peh showed us is also open to interpretation, and therefore that opens the door for the rest of us to interpret other things as is appropriate. Another example that he says is, you have this Gemara that talks about, it's a Gemara in Megillah, Yetzer HaMidbar, Bet, and other places, that Hashem showed Moshe everything that a Talmid Vatik is a Tid Lechadesh, everything that a future student is going to have a Chiddush, a novel ideas, right? He showed him Diktukei Torah, Diktukei Sofrim, all that's going to come novel new. So he says it can't be that it means that Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu all of that Torah that's going to be new so that Moshe should teach the Jewish people, because if it was so that Moshe would teach the Jewish people, then there would be any more novelties. So rather, it's like what the Tosfos Yom Tov in his commentary on the Mishnah, his introduction to the commentary on the Mishnah, it's like what he says, that it wasn't for anybody else, it was that he showed it to him, Her'ahu. He showed it to him. He didn't teach it to him as in he should say it to somebody else or anything like that. He showed it to him. So what's the point of showing it to him? He's not going to teach the Jewish people. So the answer is, it's to hint and to point out to the Jewish people that this Torah they were being given wasn't meant to be set in stone. It was meant to be open to Chidushim, and those Chidushim, those novel ideas, are part of the Masorah, the tradition that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So this flexibility of halacha is part of the system, and that is what we're supposed to take away from these kinds of stories. It's not a fixed system. It's not a system that's completely immune to change. It's that every Moreh HaRa, everybody who is paskin halacha in any situation, has to paskin that question that he gets for that time to whoever comes. Chaim Levi points out that it's well known in halacha that you might get what seems to be the exact same question from two different people, and for reasons having to do with their circumstances, the situation, you'll tell one person that it's treif, that it's not allowed, and one person that it's kosher. as people who deal with Isser and Heter know, and he says Vadvarim Aruchim, and you can go on for that at a long time, and how, why, and whatever. But a simple example that I remember hearing years and years ago was somebody brings the same, two people bring basically the same chicken to a rabbi. One of them is very wealthy and has plenty of other food. One of them is a poor person, widow, you know, an old man with a family, and this is all their food they have for Shabbos. The rabbi might find room to be matirit for the poor people and tell the richer person, this is not the kind of food that you should be eating. So that whole flexibility of halacha, says Rav Chaim de Levi, that's the only, that only comes with the ability to find chidushim, to find novel ideas that are, that have the proper purpose of adapting and adjusting and fitting the halacha within the spirit. He's very clear, within the spirit of the system, but fitting it to the circumstances that arise. And therefore, all of these things are part of what keeps the Jewish people alive and keeps them faithful to the Torah and the tradition. And that is his explanation of his original article, in which he defended the idea that there is Kiddush and halacha, and when halacha meets new times and new situations, it's a time for rabbis of the time to find the ways to properly and appropriately apply halakha to each of those circumstances. And that is a responsive day for the 11th of Sivan. Have a great day.